Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, which university was the first one in Spain to offer a specific program of studies for women? Alfonso de Zamora was born in 1474. A graduate of the famous Camp Antón Yeshiva in Zamora, he first escaped to Portugal in 1492, but returned to Spain around 1497 as a converso. He became a teacher and scribe at the University of Salamanca until 1512, when he was transferred to the University of Alcalá de Henares. He was involved in the editing of the first polyglot Bible and wrote essays, poems, criticisms, Bible commentary, historical records, books, and teaching curricula, all under the watchful eye of the Inquisition, which took advantage of the knowledge of the conversos while never really trusting that their conversions to Christianity were genuine. Dr. Ahuva Ho was born in Tel Aviv and studied Hebrew Bible and Jewish history at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. She's done research on Alfonso de Zamora for 2 decades. After examining about 70 manuscripts written or edited by Zamora, she came to the conclusion that they reflect a tormented, resentful, bitter, and penitent crypto-Jew. Her book, Surviving the Inquisition, The Life and Work of Alfonso de Zamora, was published by CST Press in 2020, and her findings have also been published in the specialized journal Iberia Judaica. Dr. Ho lives in Los Angeles and has lectured internationally in Israel, the United States, Mexico, Spain, and New Zealand. She's taken advantage of her extensive research to publish Dagger in the Heart, a historical novel that tells the story of Alfonso de Zamora and vividly describes what life was like for the many Jews who chose to remain in Spain after the expulsion, nominally converting to Christianity, but continuing to practice Judaism covertly as crypto-Jews.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Ahuva. First, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about yourself. You're Israeli. I was wondering how you became interested in Alfonso de Zamora and the Jewish history of Zamora in Spain, because that's not very well known.
Well, at the Hebrew University, I had double majored in Bible, Hebrew Bible, and in Jewish history. So Jewish history was always very interesting for me personally. I specifically with the Jews in Spain, the Sephardim, I was interested because of about 20 years ago, I came across a document that I was working on my previous book that I published. And I worked on 21 manuscripts concerning the Book of Tzfamiah, which is one of the minor prophets in the Bible. And I came across this manuscript that really piqued my interest because the colophon, and I suppose you know what colophon is this the dedication that a scribe writes, he composes at the end of the manuscript, and he dedicates it to his patron. So this one was so strange, so unusual, and it was dedicated to an archbishop. And it was so weird that I had to know who was that scribe. So I started to ask around, and I found out that he had at the Hebrew University Library many, many manuscripts that he himself copied. So it was for me a trope. I started digging into it and I found a fabulous, very interesting person. And that was when I started to take him seriously and read and studied every document, every annotation, everything he wrote. Nobody had done it before.
And that was Alfonso de Zamora.
Yes. Yeah. He fascinated me. And I had to find out who he was.
Can you tell us a little bit about him? When and where did he live? What did he do?
Well, he was born in Zamora, of course. And he came from a family that was typically Jewish. And I say because there were so many pogroms, so many forced conversions throughout those centuries, especially since the 1391, it was countrywide pogroms. And his family and many of his neighbors in Zamora did not convert, and which tells us what kind of Jews they were. They were fiercely Jewish, and they stood against all these forced conversions.
When was he born?
He was born in 1474.
Uh-huh. So that was before the expulsion.
Yes. Yes.
So tell us what he did, a little bit about his life without giving away too much.
What we know is that in 1492, he was 18, meaning that he just graduated from the yeshiva, the Campanton Yeshiva in Zamora, which was very, very famous. Many of her graduates went on to become very famous rabbis in Spain and especially in the diaspora. So what I figured, because like Chaim Beinart, who also researched and wrote a lot about the Jews of Spain at that period, he said it was his belief that most of the Jews left for Portugal hoping to get out of the Iberian Peninsula. And somehow many of them were held back, not of their own volition. And with the king of Portugal, Manuel I, how he tricked them into forced conversions.
I think it's important to tell our listeners that Zamora is very, very close to the Portuguese border.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, very close. Yes. I drove from Zamora to the Portuguese border just to feel the distance of those people who left Zamora in 1492.
So tell us something about his work. I think something interesting is that he stayed in Spain, and yet he supported Judaism kind of covertly through his work, his translations, writings, teachings, while he was under the eye of the Inquisition. How did he do that?
I think he was very cautious. And also the archbishop, at least the first two ones, they took care of their conversos, the professors from the Inquisition. Because we have to remember that the archbishop of Spain was the head of the Inquisition. And he had the power to protect its professors.
Tell us something about the importance of the conversos in the universities at the time.
The importance was immense because they continued their scientific research, scientific writings. They were the philosophers and the doctors and the professors of Aramaic and Hebrew, Semitic languages, what they used to call the original classical languages. And they continued. Many of them were astronomers. I mean, science was part of the teaching of the group of those conversers who taught in very high prestigious universities like Salamanca and Alcalá de Henares.
It must have been very, very difficult for them to kind of walk this tightrope.
Indeed, indeed. Very, very difficult. And several of them were caught what they called Judaizing, and they were, of course, killed, burned, even among the priesthood. There were quite a number of them who were conversos, and they were caught. And I tell just one story. One of the priests, Conejo, who just exemplifies one of these converso priests.
Do you have any idea how many of these conversos actually continued to practice Judaism, who ended up being crypto-Jews?
I think many. I think the majority continue, at least the first generation, continues to be crypto-Jews. However, you know how it is. The second generation observes less than that, and then the third and the fourth, and then they're gone, unless they escape and they go to mostly Amsterdam or the Ottoman Empire lands. But initially, many of them were crypto-Jews.
Getting back to Alfonso, he wrote a lot of different things. He wrote essays and poems and Bible commentary and historical records and also how to teach. He gave a teaching curriculum. Tell us a little bit about his non-academic writings, especially the essays and poetry. How was he able to write things that were critical of the church, since, like all conversos, he was so closely watched by the Inquisition? And how were these documents preserved, and how were they discovered?
It's not that he wrote against the church in public. All these he did not. He did it in private. Those books that he did publish, like he wrote like Proverbs, and many of these Proverbs were actually Jewish Proverbs, and he published them as though they are Spanish Proverbs, but there was nothing against the church. And he wrote another treatise on how to prevent the plagues and how to take care of when you are sick with a plague. And again, it is nothing against the church. On the contrary, he added all kinds of praises and dedication to the Mother Mary and to her son, so that he could publish all these books.
What about his diary?
His diary was private. I don't think anyone else read it.
But it eventually came to light.
It came to light only when it moved into the Leiden Library. Only then, because before that they didn't know about it.
How did that happen?
Well, in my book, I explain how it moved from the Zamora family to the library in Leiden. And I know for sure, we know that we have records that it was bought by a specific book collector who had connection with the Leiden Library. But this was much later, like 200 years later, I think 17th century.
Where was it until then?
We think, and I think, that it was hidden with the family somewhere in the Ottoman Empire. And these people, the book collectors, they used to be connected to embassies. And they were in the embassies of Constantinople or other places where they could get in touch with people with interesting books. And we know that he bought this and he passed it on to the library. So I made a story about it, how it happened, but it is based on facts.
Let's talk about your book. I think that Historical fiction is a great teaching tool for people who might not otherwise learn about historical events. I think that's true with movies too, you know? You can learn a lot about history if you don't feel like getting into reading history by either seeing a movie or reading a historical novel. So I think that it's a great teaching tool or learning tool, really. What motivated you to write it?
As I said, I was fascinated by this personality. And from his personal writings, I saw a man who was yearning to be back in Israel, the land of Israel, to be free from the Catholic Church. He yearned to be a Jew without any fear. He was even willing to fight. Several times he wrote it that he was willing to fight for his right not only to be considered a full citizen in Spain, but to be able to be a Jew openly, freely.
Because apparently he was not permitted to leave because he was so useful to the church.
Yes, yeah. And I think by then he had children, he had his wife, he had things that were familiar. And I know people like that, even nowadays, they don't want to rock the boat. And I think he wanted his children to leave. I have a friend in Zamora who checked his descendants, his records of his descendants in Zamora. And she found out that his son, Francisco, in Zamora, had like a child or son or grandson. Anyway, it was like fourth generation from Alfonso de Zamora, who wanted to be considered a full citizen, a full Spanish, a full Catholic, because he tried to show that he does not have the tainted blood of a Jew, that he came from a noble family. So that was very interesting. But it was only from one son. The rest of his children, I hope that they left.
How long did it take to write the book?
In fact, it didn't take me long. It took me a few months, like 4 months to write the whole book. However, then I gave it to a friend of mine and I said, what do you think? So he edited it. He told me what to change, to move the beginning, to do, not to make it trajectory, to make it go late and come back early. And he told me how to write it instead of telling the story, make it conversational. So he changed the whole format of the book. But the book itself was already written.
Did you have to do additional research or did you base it on research that you had already done for your scholarly work?
Yes, I didn't have to do some more research now because I have done it for 20 years. And first of all, I wrote a book. It was more academic book on all the documents that Alfonso de Zamora wrote, copied, you know, wrote himself, commentary, or whatever he wrote, I wrote it down as an academic book for university students, for professors. And after I finished that, a friend of mine, that same editor, told me, why don't you write a novel about the man? The man is fascinating. So I said, you know what? That's a great idea. And that's when I started writing about him.
Well, obviously, as you mentioned, a lot of things in the novel are things that you imagine, such as conversations and that sort of thing. But how much of the story is totally historically based and how much of it is fiction? For example, I don't know, personal things like the number of children, what happened to them, divorces, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know he had 3 children in Alcalá, because he mentions them. He mentioned Juan and he mentioned Jeromilo. So he had a daughter. We don't know her name. I suppose because I know he was married with a 14-year-old girl in Samora. So probably she was his first wife. And this again came out from the record of this of the town that my friend researched. And she found out that Alfonso de Zamora, when he came back from Portugal, he married a 14-year-old Guiomar. This is there in the in records, in the town archives. So I knew about her, and I knew that at one point he was called Alfonso, not de Zamora, but de Arcos. So I made this story that they moved to Arcos, and then from there, he was recommended to teach at the in Salamanca. But he had probably two wives in two different places.
What about other incidents, such as the poisoning of Cardinal Cisneros, and without getting into details that you have in your book, a certain compromising document about him? Were they true, or were they just things that, that you made up?
What is true, it, what I built on upon, is that there were rumors since then that he was poisoned. That's all what I worked with.
So you didn't have any kind of historical details about that?
No, no, we don't know. But we know that he was poisoned.
What about, you mentioned this slightly before, the remedies that he was given by maids when he was ill and then he published them. Are those remedies that were common in those days?
Yes, yes. I based all these remedies on the book that he wrote about how to treat and prevent the plague when you are sick. And he mentions all these remedies, and I just copied them.
What about the characters? How many of them were real and how many fictional? For example, Prince Yusuf is an important character, although he's not in a good deal of the book, but he's an important character. Was he a real person?
No, he wasn't, but he could have been. I based my story on what happened when Granada fell. And I checked exactly the last two kings of Granada and what happened to them and the relationship with his parents. These are true people. I don't know about the prince himself, but I just made up the story because I know what happened in Granada when Cisneros came over and forced all the Moors to convert.
Something that I found very interesting, and I would like you to comment on, is his second wife, whose name is, in the book is Isolda, you just said you don't know what her real name was, studied women's studies in Salamanca and in Alcalá. And you mention in the book that it was at the very beginning of women's studies. What can you tell us about that? Were women really studying at the university at that time? And what did they study before the university to be able to get into the university? And what was considered women's studies?
Yes, this is true. Salamanca was the first to open for women's studies, or for women to go to classes. Alfonso de Zamora himself mentions the girls who come into his class to study, and they are not really interested in studying. So we know that there were girls studying in Alcalá.
Did they study anything specific, or did they study the same things as the boys?
You know what? I have no idea. What I think is that they studied how to behave, to properly educate them to be good wives.
At the university?
You know, if you go to university, you have more of a chance to get a good husband. But I think they did study some theology, some philosophy, but I doubt they studied science. When he was writing about the girls coming into his class and demanding all kinds. They wanted to tell him what they wanted to study. He was very frustrated about the women in his class, the girls in his class. He really didn't like to teach them. So he taught them, as he said, about the women, how wonderful wives they were, how beautiful they were, how important they were to the stories, to the Bible. So I suppose this was the purpose of them going to university. But you ask about how factual are the stories. For example, I wanted to mention the pirates, the Jewish pirates in the Mediterranean Sea. Yes, this is a real story. These are real people that I mentioned.
Tell us a little bit about the pirates.
Yes, the pirates started as Jewish groups, those who escaped from Spain. And they wanted to take revenge. And they wanted to sabotage the Spanish and Portuguese fleets in the Mediterranean Sea. And the people were frightened of them. And then after a while, they joined together with the pirates of the Ottomans. And they made together a very formidable threat to the Catholic fleets, so much so that they had to go around Africa if they wanted to go to India for business. So Sinan and his partner, the Ottoman partner, they took control of the Mediterranean Sea, and this is true.
How long did that last?
I really don't know. I know that at least until the 1530s, 1540s, they took control. I don't know what happened after that. I know they were Jewish pirates in the Caribbean also, even later than that.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
A lot of facts are used. A lot of facts with some changes. I went myself to Alcalá and to Salamanca and to Zamora and checked the universities and checked everything possible. The juderías there, there is a synagogue there that is boarded up. It's still there. And on the main street, there is still what used to be a synagogue, a big synagogue, but now it is a hospital run by nuns. In Alcalá, yeah. So I really went there. I know exactly where the palace of the archbishop was, still there, and how it is so close to the juderia, and the university is very close to the juderia. I went there and they showed me exactly where he taught, the building where he taught, the classes. I mentioned the small prison where they kept students who were mischievous. They kept them in prison. So I saw all these buildings and places, and I hope I brought them alive.
Yes, I think so. I think that it's a very easy book to read and very entertaining, while it's also very informative. So I think you did a very good job.
Thank you. Yeah, that the Spanish version of the book is coming out very soon.
Thank you very much, Ahuva.
Thank you, Linda. I appreciate.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner @RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.